We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Nick Whalen, Joe Bartle, back with you as we are every Wednesday throughout the NFL offseason. Joe, we're inching closer and closer to the NFL draft. We are, I believe, like about exactly a month away, maybe even under a month away from the 2024 draft. Make sure you check out John and Mario on this podcast feed. Those guys covering all things draft. We got a new three-round mock up on the site. Well, we'll touch on some of those prospects throughout this pod and throughout future pods, Joe, but we'll hit all of the news from the last week as we get some, you know, signings still trickling out. We have some rule changes to discuss, but we'll get back into some best ball ADPs, some guys who maybe going a little bit too high in reaction to some of these free agency moves. And if we have time, survey the futures market, which was heavily updated over at DraftKings earlier this week. Got some bets that I want to run by you, Joe. But let's start with the new kickoff rules. You know, right away you're thinking, all right, this probably doesn't really matter all that much for fantasy. And I would say you're probably right. I don't think we're going to, you know, suddenly see leagues clamoring to have everybody roster a kick returner, but I will say I am in favor of this overall, Joe. I know it's going to be strange. You know, the NFL makes rule changes, feels like every offseason, and there's always a, you know, kind of a pushback initially, and you have both sides warring back and forth. This one is interesting to me though, because it's not penalty related, right? Most of the rule changes that we hear about, including the hip drop tackle rule that came through earlier this week, you know, most of it is like, oh man, how is this going to, you know, how is this going to affect kind of the pacing of the game? Whereas I think it got to the point, especially last season, where the kickoffs just felt like it was meaningless, right? And if you didn't see a touchback, that became a unique event. I'm glad that the NFL is being prescient here, recognizing an issue, borrowing something from the XFL, kind of admitting some level of humility here and saying, hey, this other league that's kind of trying to be somewhat of a rival to us, we like what they're doing, and bringing this rule now to the NFL. So we'll try not to do like a full breakdown, like audio-wise. That's just kind of hard to explain. You've probably read the articles by now. You've seen the extensive like video diagram that the NFL put out. But I'm optimistic about this. I'm at least excited to see what it looks like in practice.
Yeah, so let's remove the fantasy angle from this, because I think there is, it's marginal, but I think there is a fantasy angle from it. I agree with you. It's great to see the NFL making a change that seems to be positive. I despise the hip drop tackle. I can guarantee you there's going to be four times that it's going to come up on either one of our XM shows that we do. I'm sure Jeff's team's going to get screwed over. It feels like the Bengals always do, specifically with these new rules. I hate it. I do not want to give the referees, whether it be NFL, NBA, MLB, bowling, I don't care. I want as little referee impact as possible. And this is going to just add more margin for error on a year, I felt like, especially past three or 4 years, that the referees have been just downright miserable. So I'm frustrated that the NFL seems tone deaf in that one. I don't believe it's a safety issue per se, or at least it's going to impact other things. Mario has been talking about on Twitter, and I think rightfully so. What's going to happen when Mark Andrews gets targeted in the knee? I mean, think about Gronkowski, how many times that had to happen too in his career, which shortened it. This is a negative, the hip drop tackle rule. The kickoff rule, though, I think is a positive, and I kind of liken it to baseball, which correctly identified they need to make significant changes in order to attract a different generation of fans. I think that's going to happen over a matter of time. The NFL needs to make sure that they're not just adding rules to make things more complicated or to make things more frustrating from a viewer perspective. And I think the kickoff rule adds more excitement to the game. And boy, I wrote the gambling article for the Super Bowl, one of the Super Bowl articles we had, and kickoff was kickoff touchback, first kickoff was minus 350, which was the highest I think it's been in multiple years. Now, it was in part because Harrison Butker and Jake Moody both could blast out of the end zone, but it goes to what you said, where the kickoff change had just been, all right, it's going to be kicked out of the back of the end zone no matter what, or to the point where nobody wants to return. There was no upside for it. Now, I think this certainly benefits teams that have good returners. I thought about Keyshawn Nixon, I'm sorry, for the Packers, getting a three-year, $18 million deal. He was not even a good slot corner. And I know the Packers are trying to push that angle. That's why they chose to re-sign him. But I think they had in mind that this new kickoff return rule is going to matter. Cordarrelle Patterson signed with the Steelers. Is that a reaction to the kickoff rule as well? Maybe. I mean, the Steelers are already one of those teams that you trust from a special teams perspective anyhow, that might have just put value in that spot overall. But I'm excited for it as a fan of the game. I'm excited for it as a positive change that the NFL desperately needed to prove that it could be capable of doing too. I think there's a lot of pro football related reasons that this change happened.
So only about 21% of kickoffs were returned last year, not for touchdowns, returned in general, just like attempted returns, which was by far, the lowest ever in league history. So I think it had reached a breaking point. I think you're totally right on Keyshawn Nixon. You know, when that contract first came through, you're like, all right, everybody likes Keyshawn Nixon. It's good. You know, the Packers are a team that historically has never really prioritized especially kick and punt returning. So it was kind of cool to have, one of those short list of guys that actually matter at that spot on the roster. But at first you're like, man, this is kind of a lot of money for a kick returner who's, not great as like your last option as a defensive back. But I think they knew this rule change was coming. I think the Cordarrelle Patterson signing, it's absolutely a reaction to this. How could it not be, right? I mean, maybe it's just coincidental timing, but I think the smart teams are going to see an advantage here, and they're going to, special teams coaches are going to be grinding XFL tape. You're going to be watching every single kickoff from the last few years of the XFL to see, all right, what worked, what didn't work. I think there are going to be opportunities here to exploit this, and I'm really excited to see how it works. I mean, the one thing I have a question about is, so touchbacks are not completely off the table. Like if the ball lands in the landing zone, which is I think the 30-yard line to the goal line, it has to be returned.
I think it was 20. I thought it was the 20-yard line to the zero. Am I wrong with that?
This is exactly why I said we shouldn't try to explain it on the podcast.
Sorry.
It's too convoluted. You are correct. It is the 20-yard line and the goal line. If the ball comes down anywhere in there, you have to return it. No fair catch, none of that. A touchback is still valid. And if you kick it into the end zone, that means you're getting the ball. The other team gets the ball at the 30-yard line. So, a slight bump over the previous spot. I do wonder, though, it's like if we get four kick return touchdowns in the first few weeks of the season, if teams do find ways to exploit this, is the whole goal of this is you want as many kicks to be returned as possible, right? Again, not for touchdowns, but you just want action on those plays if you're the NFL. Is it punitive enough to give the team the ball at the 30-yard line? Should it have been like the 35 if you're really trying to eliminate touchbacks?
Yeah, a 5-yard difference given the touchback was a 25-yard line this past season. It's worth noting this is a 1-year rule too, not like the referees supposedly challenging PIs and actually looking at it, but actually they're going to assess it over a 1-year period. And maybe they find that that's what they change it to, the 35-yard as opposed to 30 to penalize teams from making that choice. I would love to bring back, and you and I grew up in this generation where Devin Hester and Dante Hall and even Ted Ginn Jr. were literal playmakers and difference makers in the game of football. I mean, Keyshawn Nixon was the back-to-back all-pro returner now, and he has had one touchdown in 2 years. Braxton Berrios is one, and that's another really good returner. So I'm happy that we're returning to a period theoretically where these guys have a lot of value as returners. And I would be curious to see too. I would imagine while the special teams coordinators, I'm thinking the returnee coordinators, are gaming ways to get extra yardage, there's going to be the defensive return capabilities too, that you're not going to see a major jump right away. Just like the preseason, you're kind of testing things out.
Yeah.
I think coordinators are going to test out and find loopholes or exploits that they'll use when games matter more. And I think, this is completely different, but sort of similar concept. Andy Reid getting Rashee Rice more involved in the offense for the Chiefs as the season progressed and then really broke up Rashee Rice towards the latter month and a half and certainly ramping up to the playoffs. If we could do some sort of bet, because I guess I'm a degenerate to this level, when are more kickoff and punt return touchdowns happening throughout a season? I'm willing to bet it would be the November, December range as teams have kind of figured things out. Whereas those first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, I don't feel like this is going to be a substantial enough change for it to impact a lot of the return touchdowns.
See, I would guess the complete opposite, and it's just that it's a guess. But I would think early on when there's a little more chaos, when it's like you're lining up for the first real new kickoff, you know, in week one, it's like I feel like that maybe is when there might be more confusion on the coverage side of things. And by the way, you mentioned Dante Hall. Thank you for doing that. If you're under age like 27, please right now pause the podcast. You can go listen to it later in the feed and go watch Dante Hall highlights on YouTube if you want to understand just how ridiculous this guy was. You know, the other thing, and I promise we won't spend the next 40 minutes talking kickoffs, but this, you know, this is kind of the news of the week.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The surprise onside kick is now dead. You basically have to now report if you're going to kick an onside kick. And that format for now remains the same. You know, not that big of a deal. It's like, how many surprise onside kicks do you see per year? Probably less than 10 over, you know, the entire season for all 32 teams. But, you know, an interesting strategy point. Obviously, you think back to how impactful that was for the Saints and their Super Bowl run, you know, 15 years ago. But, you know, kind of a small concession, I suppose, that the league had to make here.
Yeah, and if we're workshopping ways in which I want the NFL to be better, you know, special teams actually is a number of different ways. The Eagles have proposed it now for the second consecutive year, which was turned down. Instead of an onside kick, you would do a 4th and 15 or 4th and 20, which was related to the XFL rules, I think, that they have from an onside kick perspective. Mm-hmm. I want to say there was 3 onside kick recoveries total last season. Like, under 5% of onside kick recoveries over the past 2 years have actually been recovered by the opposing team. I think about it almost like a Madden perspective. Like, I don't want someone to spam onside kicks every single time, because it's possible to have and to occur, but it needs to be more frequent. Like, the game shouldn't just be over when a team is up 2 scores with 3 minutes left. Like, there needs to be some intrigue, and the bad teams will allow that situation to occur a little bit more fruitfully. But that's the difference between bad teams and good teams as well. Like, the teams that are prioritizing and understanding special teams to the level that they do, which is why they're a good team, are not going to have those situations happen. But you should be able to have the advantage in an onside kick if you do have things. I think the Falcons, like Younghoe Koo, has kind of specialized in those. And to remove what is an advantage relative to the rest of the kickers in the NFL, I think is wrong. So if you are going to go that direction, let's add a bit more possibility for change with those 4th down and 15 or 20, whatever you want to make. I want that rule to happen next, because I want more opportunity for change to occur in the fourth quarter. And while that wouldn't really squash the onside kick thing that you're mentioning, that is the next rule change that needs to occur if we are going to have the referees continue to decide outcomes like they have the past 2 years. NFL, stop it. Stop making us do that. let's at least add some fun with the 4th and 15, 4th and 20 stuff.
All right, that's it for kickoff talk. We will revisit this several months from now when we actually have a look at it in the preseason. Let's hit some news items. Again, you know, most of the, you know, the NFL offseason craziness has transpired over the last couple of weeks, but still a few news and notes to run through. We mentioned Cordarrelle Patterson signing with the Steelers. Josh Reynolds inked a two-year, $14 million deal with the Denver Broncos, who already have Marvin Mims. They, of course, have Cortland Sutton in the mix, traded away Jerry Jeudy this offseason. He's now in Cleveland. What do you make of this landing spot for Reynolds?
I was surprised by it. In one, because Reynolds has really succeeded with Jared Goff. You think back to the Rams, and then, of course, the Lions the past 2 years. When they have been dinged up or had players missing due to suspension, Jameson Williams, the Josh Reynolds, Jared Goff connection has kind of been that Juwan Jennings third and one, right? That's the 49ers saying for when they throw to Juwan Jennings. It's been kind of that level of consistency and reliability, and not that you're really using Josh Reynolds too much in even regular fantasy leagues, but that was a target for the Lions that mattered and was a difference maker. I think that offense is going to miss him just a little bit. Not, again, not fantasy wise, but we'll miss it in third down situations in particular. I was thinking the Broncos were just going to kind of stand pat and more or less just retool. Sean Payton has infinity to get this roster ready to be competitive. The fact that they cut Russell Wilson with this insane dead cap penalty that they're running over the next 2 years just indicates to me that Sean Payton has a stranglehold on this roster. And he shouldn't, by the way. I think he's kind of overrated from a head coach perspective. I said that last year. I certainly believe that this year. But Reynolds now, I would assume, kind of bumps up Marvin Mims from what I thought was very clear runway, which was like wide receiver round 12, where he's being drafted by default. No matter if it's you, Nick, throwing to Marvin Mims, that kind of workload I figured was going to make Marvin Mims more of a wide receiver round 8 target. But if Reynolds is there and occupying some space, you still have Cortland Sutton, who's a red zone threat, even if it's not Russell Wilson throwing the ball anymore to him. I'm less interested in Marvin Mims. I don't think that matters much for Josh Reynolds. The quarterback really makes a difference, though, because if it is Jarrett Stidham throwing the ball to Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims, and Josh Reynolds, I'm really concerned. And I'm the proponent now for the past 2 years that I'll take a good receiver in a bad situation every single day. I capitalized on Drake London his rookie year. I thought Amari Cooper the past 2 years was totally fine. Jarrett Stidham's a level of bad quarterback that we can't really comprehend. And Cortland Sutton, Josh Reynolds, Marvin Mims trio does not elevate Stidham to the level that I think would make him worthwhile to take any of these receivers right now.
Does Tim Patrick factor into the mix for you whatsoever in Denver? You know, took a pay cut. He's on the roster for the time.
Yeah.
I mean, do we care about this at all?
I know the Broncos want us to. I know that some like beat writers for the Broncos also want us to. I understand Tim Patrick's fast and big, and those qualities have made us interested in Josh Gordon and Chase Claypool over the many, many years now that that's been a archetype. No, I don't really care what's going to happen with Tim Patrick. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's foolish. There are so many guys, especially in round 18 and later, just in the best balls that I've been doing, that I will roll the dice on. We could talk about J.K. Dobbins too, who's been cleared for activities. I don't know if he signs with the team, but like that level of player makes more sense than a guy that's had multiple knee injuries over the past 3 seasons in an offense that projects to be one of the worst in the NFL. No, I don't care for that wide receiver four.
All right. So the Packers signed Greg Joseph, bringing in some competition for Anders Carlson. I'm going to limit you to like 1 minute on this because we're reaching our maximum on just general
special teams talk
on this pod. But I would imagine as a you know, critical fan of the Packers that you don't mind some competition coming in for Carlson, who was, you know, predictably shaky for most of the year.
Yeah, I guess I just wish it was better competition. The Packers were reportedly in on Nick Folk before he returned back to Tennessee. That would have made me feel a lot better, especially in the cold conditions that Lambeau presents, as opposed to Greg Joseph, who is 3 of 7 from 50-plus yards last season. That's the same mark as Anders Carlson last season, too. But at least Carlson could Joseph made a few more extra points than Carlson. It's not great competition. Honestly, that they signed Greg Joseph, to me, says Brian Gutekunst, I'm not surprised by this at all, wants Carlson to get the job. Like that is the goal. Like if they had wanted to really go and get Nick Folk or any other one of these other veteran kickers, you think of a Joey Sly, who I don't think he returned to the Commanders, went somewhere else. But like that kind of kicker, I think would have been great in Lambeau, and certainly with this high-powered offense, that Greg Joseph is the best they could do to offer a competition to Carlson. Tells me that Carlson probably is the front runner for the job, to start training camp. We'll see if that happens. I mean, famously, his brother, Daniel Carlson, was cut by the Vikings before becoming an all-pro kicker for the Raiders. I feel like that's going to happen. Having been a long-suffering kicker fan ever since Ryan Longwell vacated the Packers kicking job and went to the Vikings, I feel like that's just in the cards that Carlson's going to go somewhere else and actually thrive, not in Green Bay. But we'll see. I mean, again, like you said, limit to 1 minute of production of talking for kickers. So yeah, I'm fine with that. This is a non-news story in a cycle of news that needs news at the moment.
Joey Sly did land elsewhere, by the way. He is a Jacksonville Jaguar.
They basically how could I forget?
They basically swapped McManus and Sly. McManus now with the Commanders. Sticking with Green Bay for a moment, Christian Watson, we got the news right after the season that, you know, he was kind of – basically sounded like he was open to anything to try to fix these hamstring issues. And I think the Packers also very open to that. Basically fired their entire medical staff. They've had all these crazy soft tissue injuries over the last few years. And obviously Watson has been – at the top of that list, you know, feeling optimistic after getting that evaluation. Are you buying that? It just feels like there's no real way to tell, right? Like there's nothing that he could do, nothing he could say over the next 5 months. It's like, okay, you stayed healthy in the preseason. Great. It feels like no matter what, you're going into a year where if you're drafting Christian Watson, you know what you're signing up for in terms of the amount of risk that you're incurring. I'll tell you right now, on average in underdog best balls, he's going as about the wide receiver 40, round pick 85 to 90 overall. He went 83rd in my most recent best ball.
Oh, I'm aware because I've been targeting pretty heavily in the best balls that I've done. We'll get to that a little bit later on when we talk about guys that are a little bit overvalued and I think undervalued in the case of Jaden Reed and Christian Watson. The Watson injury stuff, to me, it's like there's literally no downside. I mean, this guy has had significant soft tissue injuries for the better part of the past 2 years for the Packers, and that they fired the entire medical staff or just about indicates to me that they're not happy with the results. You look at Aaron Jones, even Davante Adams, with the Packers too. Jaden Reed had soft tissue issues this season. There are way too many prominent players that just saying, oh, Watson's tall and big and fast, therefore he's more prone to it, doesn't work for me. I think there's probably some sort of conditioning aspect that the Packers medical staff hadn't been doing. They've always been really prone to really taking a long season approach with these things. Watson missed three games. Aaron Jones will miss two or three games. When other players come back relatively quickly from these types of deals, I don't know, like, what from a testing perspective, and that there wasn't more information revealed, like if they're like, oh well, you're doing this wrong, therefore if we just correct this it'll make sense. You could release that information if you are pro Packers and pro UW Madison medical staff to say, yes, we are going to make a difference. That they didn't tells me that there might not be an actionable reason other than let's just do more of the strengthening and whatever else. I'm sure we're going to get some Christian Watson puff piece in late July saying he ate spinach 17 times in the span of 24 days and therefore now I'll be fully healthy for the start of the year. There's always that type of deal that happens. But if I'm taking a gamble or a risk on one of the Packers receivers to break out, it is Christian Watson in my mind. They have six guys that had over 350 receiving yards. Like Jaden Reed, I mean, we'll do this right now, is being drafted as like a fifth round wide receiver target, wide receiver 30 to 35, 38 range. I love Jaden Reed, 10 touchdowns last year. That's awesome. The way the Packers and Matt LaFleur spread the ball around makes complete sense that Jaden Reed should be drafted among the higher guys. But Watson has the big play potential, especially in best ball formats. That guy can go off for two touchdowns and 100 yards on four catches easy, depending on what they want to scheme. And we know that Aaron Rodgers was targeting him in Watson's rookie year. Jordan Love was also looking Watson's way. You think about the Chiefs game when he had that improbable catch in the red zone. There are ways in which the Packers use their receivers uniquely to be red zone threats and also capable 20-yard big play options, that if Watson's healthy, that's the guy that I want three rounds later more than Jaden Reed. So I'm all in on Christian Watson from a best ball perspective. And if his value drops even further, let's just say round 9-10, I'll take him as my wide receiver 5 in a redraft and not think twice of it, because the upside is absolutely there in this offense.
I think you said the key thing for me right now, which is in best ball, because you're getting the best weeks. And you know, you might say, oh, seventh round pick, I mean, that's kind of an investment. I mean, that's oftentimes like your fourth receiver. If I say more likely than not, it's your fourth receiver. And sometimes it might be your fifth receiver in best ball. So I think you're right about that. You know, you still get the splash weeks. And even last year when he was injured, you know, you still see the flashes. Like I'd rather have a player who's proven that he's good, proven that he could produce and can't stay healthy, as opposed to, you know, somebody who stays healthy and has proven that he's bad. You know, there's still that upside to dream on. And, you know, like you mentioned, what are the Packers going to say? Obviously, they're going to come out earlier right. this week and say, yeah, everything's looking good. We're optimistic. Like, yeah, it was a total disaster, man. His body is completely broken. And, you know, we're just crossing our fingers. Like, yeah, of course, the results are going to be relayed as positive, you know, to the football community. But I'm still skeptical, right? I'm going to be a lot more hesitant to invest, I think, in redraft than I am in best balls. Let's talk a little Malik Nabers here. You know, we don't do a ton of draft talk here. We typically leave that to our guys, John and Mario, and we'll ramp that up as the draft gets closer. And certainly when we have some landing spots a month from now, then we'll really be diving in. But Malik Nabers reportedly clocking a 4.35 at his LSU pro day.
Yeah. I mean, so I want to preface this. John and Mario are one of the best, I think, prospect guys in the NFL. For every one wrong one they get, and everyone does, I'll trust them for the tenfold guys that they do get correct. And we could go through their resume player by player, and I would put up against anybody. So I'm not just touting them because I'm an employee of RotoWire. I'm not just touting them because they're my friends and I work with Mario a lot, and John obviously over the years too. If I'm doing dynasty stuff, it's Alan Sosnowski, it's Mario Puig, and it's John McKechnie, and I'm letting them guide me all the way to every championship over the next 10 years because that's how confident I feel in the results. So I know that they are high on Malik Nabers. I understand that a 4.35 at LSU's Pro Day probably is akin to more like a 4.4, like early 4.4 at the Combine. I don't know those one-to-ones as relative to what John and Mario do, but it's like a 4.35 is eye-popping. There's a reason he chose to run it at his Pro Day and not the Combine, and I think that matters to me. But this receiver class is really shaping up to look like what I thought the 2020 class was going to be. And if you recall, Nick, I know that Henry Ruggs went number one among receivers of that class, but it was really, do you like Jerry Jeudy more or do you like CeeDee Lamb more? And my whole contention was, I think it's a 1A, 1B. Like I literally can't go wrong in either one of those scenarios. Now, it did go wrong. I think it's fair to say CeeDee Lamb clearly is the better receiver of those two. Jerry Jeudy is, I think, probably 4, 5, 6 if we run down the list of guys from that class. But Jeudy was fine. I think in a better situation, better coaching staff would be more relevant to me. So when I say I think Marvin Harrison is one, and then I think Roma Dunze and Malik Nabers are 2A and 2B, it is not a knock on either one of Malik Nabers or Dunze. I like it, the archetype stuff. Like I'm not as good as John and Mario at adapting and understanding what a 4.38 means as opposed to a 4.42 of X body weight. Like that's just not my forte. I watch a lot of the tape. I understand that Nabers is a uniquely gifted athlete, one capable of running routes that I think few others in the NFL can do, certainly at his size and speed. But Dunze is 6'4 and 220. Like if I'm saying which one of these guys do other dumb NFL coordinators, I'm thinking dumb NFL coordinators, not smart ones, dumb NFL coordinators will get the most out of, it has to be Adunze, who might fall to like 1.8, 1.10 range, which then becomes a team that can easily use him as a alpha receiver, obvious target, as opposed to Nabers, who I'm not confident a dumb team can utilize the same way. So while the 4.35 is sexy and flashy and everything else for Nabers at his pro day, I think Adunze right now in my mind feels much like Drake London, a bigger receiver target who even in a bad situation can get you 1,000 receiving yards and 80 catches. Nabers should, like a smart coach 100% gets Nabers involved to that level, but I'm just not sure a smart coach is drafting him. And we'll have to see, you know, come at the end of April where these guys end up going. But right now I like Adunze far more than I like Nabers just from the archetype bodies alone.
I want to talk about some best case, worst case landing spots for some of these top receivers in a moment. But first, I want to remind you, we're brought to you by On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back, Joe, to the golden days of fantasy football? You know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, of course, the bragging rights. Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with a revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against the unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create contests in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends plus today's stars. using real historical data to simulate action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the on-demand DFS app now to get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Go check it out. On-demand DFS. You can find it in the Google Play Store. You can find it in the App Store, the on-demand DFS app. Joe, I think you mentioned something that's extremely important, right? And going back to the Judy versus CeeDee Lamb debate, right?
Yeah.
Easy to say now. Pretty easy to like both of those guys coming out of the draft. I was a big CeeDee Lamb guy. I could not believe that Dallas got him of all teams at 17.
Right.
I think there will be the Jerry Jeudy defenders who would say, well, look, if he went to Dallas, you know, maybe he'd be having the career that CeeDee Lamb had. And I don't know if I agree with that, but it's pretty inarguable that CeeDee Lamb ended up in the better spot for him to have, you know, immediate success over his first 3 or 4 years compared to, you know, what Jerry Jeudy walked into in Denver. And then, of course, you know, Russell Wilson entering the picture to further muck that up. How much does that concern you when you start to look at, okay, Malik Nabers? Yeah, he could go to the Chargers. He could play with Justin Herbert. That would be a lot of fun. That'd be a pretty good spot for him in year one. Or he could end up with the New York Giants. Or, you know, he right. could end up some you know, maybe a team trades up. I don't know. Maybe the Denver Broncos end up with one of these receivers at 12, right? You know, the Oakland Raiders could be shopping at 13. Who knows, right? So I think you made the case that Adunze is probably the most quarterback proof, and I think his body of work would bear that out. I think some people would say Marvin Harrison as well. I mean, he's widely considered the highest floor, safest of these elite receivers. I will say that right now, like among these top 10 to 15 teams in the draft, there aren't that many like pure disaster landing spots to me, right? I mean, and maybe that just speaks more to, you know, kind of the breadth of quarterback play that we have right now, which ironically felt terrible midway through last season with some of the injuries we had. It felt like half the teams, you know, were rolling out a quarterback that you just didn't want to see week to week. But the combination of, you know, this incoming quarterback class, you know, the idea that, you know, teams like Chicago and Washington and New England, all these teams could be getting big upgrades. We'll see where JJ McCarthy ends up landing. I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but I don't necessarily see that many like total, oh my gosh, worst case scenario. I really hope Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze don't end up with this team scenarios.
Yeah. So real quick, Marvin Harrison is clearly my one, and Odunze Nabers, like the 2A, 2B. So I think Marvin Harrison is quarterback proof. I think he's coordinator proof. I think that Greg Roman and Jim Harbaugh are going to be football terrorists. The Chargers might win games, but like, we're going to hate everything about that. Even Marvin Harrison, I think, would succeed and be really, really good. Am I taking Marvin Harrison mid-second round in best balls where he currently is going? No, we could talk about that later, possibly. But like, I think Marvin Harrison, it makes total sense in the world. The top five, and I love, I mean, I say there are three holidays in my life. I think Christmas, my birthday, summer, it can kind of be the same thing. The day Madden gets released, I have had a lot of Madden conversation already, but that's a holiday for me. And the NFL draft, those are my three holidays throughout the year. So now that I have a son, maybe I should throw Easter and Halloween in that mix. That's fine. Yeah, I agree. Shake head, Nick. That's,
maybe
that's
your
right.
Son's birthday. Thanks.
Yeah, that's not a holiday. It's his birthday. That's different. My birthday is a holiday. Let's be clear on this, Nick. But no, those are the three. So I love the NFL draft, and I love the mock draft part of things. That's always fun to me, reading all these different opinions that we're going to possibly have four or even five quarterbacks within the first six picks. Makes it really difficult to answer the what's the worst case landing spot, because I don't even think like Drake May or Jaden Daniels or McCarthy or Bo Nix or Penny. I don't think any of these quarterbacks, those level quarterbacks, or even like top 12, 15 overall prospects. But because we need quarterbacks, especially, and a lot of these teams, I think Patriots, Commanders, maybe even Giants, are outside motivated to draft quarterbacks for reasons that don't matter to football, makes it all the more frustrating to me. So like, if Drake May and Jaden Daniels go 2 and 3, whatever order, if JJ McCarthy, a team like the Vikings, trades up to get him, we've heard a lot of rumors about that thus far. I would sooner say Justin Jefferson's gone. He's going to force his way out, because I don't think McCarthy is that level of quarterback. That will make a lot of sense to help that passing attack. I think there's a lot of really bad landing spots if the dumb teams are smart and take these really good receivers, because I think Adunze and I think Neighbors and Marvin Harrison certainly are all way, way better prospects than what Jaden Daniels and Drake May are. So like Commanders, I would not feel good about if any one of those receivers go there. Same for the Patriots. That feels really gross to me. The Cardinals, like that's the popular landing spot for Marvin Harrison. If you're saying you're drafting him among the first 22 picks, you want Marvin Harrison to go there over anywhere else. But even in that scenario, it's Kyler Murray throwing him the ball. I like Michael Wilson a lot, but that's not a confident spot where Marvin Harrison's going to go easily project for 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns. The Giants would be awful. Like if Daniel Jones or whoever else is throwing the ball to an Adunze or Neighbors, you're losing value immediately on any one of them where they're being currently drafted. Adunze in the 4th round, Neighbors 3rd, 4th round. I think if the Titans, not that they were going to go that direction with Treylon Burks still kind of in that prospect territory, that's not a confident landing spot for me either. If the Bears were to take Caleb Williams at 1 and then have the Keenan Allen, DJ Moore combo and then 3rd receiver, that sure is sexy on paper, but that offensive line has a lot of woes. There's a reason why Justin Fields never really panned out the way they did. If the Jets, which I've seen a lot of rumors as well, were to take a wide receiver, I don't like that landing spot. We've talked about famously Aaron Rodgers not doing well with new targets and needs time. How long do you have Aaron Rodgers there? And if he leaves, does that one of these top prospects fall out of favor with that new regime? There's so many of those things. And it's all dependent on what happens with the Jaden Daniels, Drake May, because then we can answer the other questions. That right now, there is not a single one of those top 3 rookie receivers that I'm drafting in best ball, because there's far too many unknowns with the way this draft could play out.
I guess I'm looking at it maybe a little bit more on like a 2-3 year development period, as opposed to, you know, what can they do right away next season. But you're right, the Giants would be the worst case scenario. And there's a real chance that one of those guys, you know, goes 6 to New York, and, you know, I'm not touching that guy at ADP, whether it's in best ball or in redraft come the fall. Tennessee is interesting to me. I don't think they would take a receiver. You know, you got
not after signing Calvin Ridley.
You got Calvin Ridley, but it's not that different from what Chicago's doing right now, right? It's like I could totally see the Bears, you know, grabbing Caleb Williams at 1, grabbing, I don't know, Roma Dunze, whoever you want to give them at 9, because it's not like Keenan Allen is there long term, right? I think that's probably a 1 year thing. And then, you know, it almost becomes a Jackson Smith and Jigba situation, a souped up version of that, albeit, you know, for 1 year. And then obviously you're going forward with DJ Moore and that rookie receiver as your future. So I'm actually kind of in on that scenario. But then it also depends, you know, what your expectations are for Caleb Williams and that offense in year 1. The Jets to me are interesting. You bring up a very good point, because Aaron Rodgers has traditionally struggled to get receivers going right away. I wonder if that would be the case, though, as he's never really had a prospect of this caliber, never anything close, right? I mean, the receivers that they've given him have developed into very good players, partially because of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. But would it be different if you're handing him someone like Roma Dunze as opposed to, you know, second round Davante Adams?
I don't think so, but that's because I'm basing off the personality that we know of Aaron Rodgers to be. And it's that personality that made me worried about Garrett Wilson last year. Now, I don't know if that would have ended up playing out. There was a lot of positive talk about Garrett Wilson throughout training camp, and that Rodgers was working side by side with him. And we were like, well, yeah, when it's Alan Lazard and Mecole Hardman or Garrett Wilson, there's one clear guy I want to throw to over all those other ones. But we never really saw that transpire. So late first round Garrett Wilson didn't work out for other reasons. I do feel more confident now in year 2 with Aaron Rodgers just around the facility, getting to know the people. I mean, It's so dumb. Like, what are we talking about personality mattering in fantasy football? But I really think that does matter for Aaron Rodgers. And I think that matters for the way the Jets want to run their offense, which is through and conversely kind of dictated by Aaron Rodgers. If he likes a player more, if he feels more comfortable with Garrett Wilson, if they have that chemistry off the field, on the field, whatever, that makes a difference. So a rookie coming in, I would be worried from a fantasy perspective. That would make the Jets offense better. And that would make the Jets football team better. So would I think drafting an offensive lineman. By the way, the Titans should draft an offensive lineman. The Bears should draft an offensive lineman. But it's not the sexy thing to do. And I go back to what the Commanders and Patriots are doing. Theoretically, if they were taking quarterbacks at 2 and 3, I don't think those are smart choices with this quarterback group and the way their rosters currently line. But there are outside forces pushing these decisions, and we have to acknowledge those. So I don't know, like, if the Bears, I happen to think Caleb Williams is not quite on par to Trevor Lawrence as a prospect. And maybe people are gonna be like, well, that's not good because Trevor Lawrence isn't good. Stop it. That team was god awful before Trevor Lawrence got there and has made them playoff relevant right away. And I think they're kind of being handicapped by bad coaching. I will buy every stock that you are selling of Trevor Lawrence right now. And I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, Nick, because you're a Jags fan. You're aware of how good Trevor Lawrence is. Watch him play. He's a good player. I think Caleb Williams is on the same level. I don't really care about the pink nails and the lip gloss and whatever else. Caleb Williams is a really, really good quarterback. And as a Packers fan, I'm going to hate that he's going to the Bears. That should speak truth right there, that as a Packers fan, I hate that they are going to take Caleb Williams number one overall. So Caleb Williams should elevate that Bears team. Maybe that is my favorite landing spot among the top 10, but I just think there are far too many unknowns. And while I like projecting Odunze to be a quarterback-proof, a offensive coordinator-proof receiver, I still need to see that stuff transpire before I really want to take any of them within the first 50 or so picks.
And I think the definition of quarterback proof also matters, right? It's like, what does that exactly mean, right? It's like, I think there's still an upside conversation to be had, right? It's like Rome Odunze can make the best of a bad situation, but that still doesn't mean he's going to give you 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns, right? It's like he could just look better than someone else would in that situation, but it might not be great for fantasy regardless. I want to go back to Tennessee real quickly and just kind of get your opinion on what they're doing this offseason. And this relates to one of the futures odds that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
Their win total, all the win totals are now up at DraftKings. Titans win total is 6.5, far and away the lowest in their own division. They've gone out. They've gone shopping. They brought in big names at premier positions. They just went and traded for L'Jarius Sneed, signed him to a 4-year, $77 million deal. They, of course, went out and signed Calvin Ridley to a high-money deal. They grabbed Tony Pollard as well, maybe a bigger name than a value at this point. But nonetheless, this is a team that has made some splashes. And yet I think the market is saying, all right, we need to see it. Go ahead. That's great. We don't necessarily believe in your quarterback. What say you? I mean, what is the plan here for Tennessee? Is it give Will Levis basically the best supporting cast we can and at least give him a fair evaluation before we make a long-term call?
I think it's exactly it. And it's the right approach, by the way. You can say what you want about Will Levis. There was that 1 week period, especially because of that write-up post that Will Levis was going to be the number 2 overall pick, right? There was the betting odds to have that happen. Yeah. I thought that was nonsense. There's no way that somebody eats mayo the way he does in his coffee is going to be number 2 overall pick. I say that in jest, but that actually is just absolutely nasty.
Yeah.
He felt like a second round pick to me. Like if Malik Willis was a third round pick by definition by the NFL teams 2 years prior, Will Levis did not seem to be much better and certainly wasn't going to be a quality first round pick. That he fell into the second round, I think actually benefits his trajectory. And we've seen the Titans make appropriate moves where the Bears have never really built around Justin Fields. The Titans, I think, are going all in on the idea that we're going to find out what Will Levis can do. And if they are wrong, oh, well, we're in the same spot where we can draft a high end quarterback anyway, possibly a better prospect. And they still have the pieces around him to figure out what that next prospect would be. So this is the correct call from a team building perspective. If you don't have the Justin Herbert prospects of the world, because I think he's like insane and was going to raise the level right away. That's not Will Levis. Maybe Will Levis can get to that point. I don't think he will. And it's the reason why I'll take the under on that, because no matter how good I think L'Jarius Sneed is, he is. The Colts should have traded for him. I think that contract was pretty small pennies relative to how good he can be as a difference maker. I don't believe Tony Pollard's all that good, but you're adding a good player in the backfield. That's a win in my book. I believe they're drafting Joe Alt, that stud tackle from Notre Dame at 6, or even trading up if that's possible. You're adding him along with Skorunski from last year. You're developing a better offensive line, all good things. Have Hopkins, have Calvin Ridley, who I also think is really good, despite being both older players. That's the right way to build a team, but I don't know if the right way to build a team means they're going to win 7 games, right? And even if the AFC South is bad, which they're not the worst division in football, but they're not the best, certainly, I don't think they are even the third best team, because I believe Anthony Richards and the Colts are going to be just as good as they were last year, maybe a little bit worse, but right on that certain level. The Titans are the fourth team in that division in my mind. I don't think it's all that close.
What's interesting though is I think all four teams are talking themselves into, hey, we're going to make the playoffs.
Oh, sure they are.
It's like I just don't. If you're the Titans, like I get, you know, you want to provide the infrastructure around Levis, but I mean they're so all in with some of these signings that it's like I don't think the expectation is, yeah, hopefully we could go 7-10. So I do think there's a contrast here of like, all right, are you developing or are you trying to develop and win on the fly, which is extremely hard to do. Like very few teams.
It's ironic if they have Mike Vrabel. if they had Mike Vrabel, I'd say actually that this team probably could compete. Like that, the coaching advantage that Mike Vrabel has relative to, I thought anybody, not anybody, but most people in the NFL would have said, hey, a 6-7 win team for the Titans, which is what Vegas is saying they are now, probably could be more like a 9-10 win team and fight for a 6-7 seed. I don't know what this new regime in Tennessee, especially from an ownership perspective, and what they're, if they're doing a Carolina Panthers and kind of getting their hands in a little bit too much, if that makes a difference or not. Yeah. I think Jacksonville is a good team. I think Trevor Lawrence is a good player. I think their defense is really good. I think the Colts got by with Gardner Minshew for 15 games and were one win away from the playoffs. CJ Stroud and Texans got better this offseason. Sure, the Titans did. They might have aspirations to the playoffs, but you still have Will Levis, who I think is pretty easily the worst quarterback in that division. Easily. That's not going to be a recipe to win 7 games in that division with that coaching. I'm sorry, with that quarterback group that's there.
I got a couple other futures numbers I want to throw out to you for the Chicago Bears. What do you think the Bears win total is?
So last year, because Jake Lutarski and I, we do the Tuesday podcast where we're doing all the waiver wire pickups. We had highlighted this in our pre-betting show. It was 7.5 wins for the Bears last year. Mm-hmm. And it was right in conjunction with the Packers. So you could do the Packers or Bears get more wins? Well, we hammer the Packers one, not just because we're homers, but because we're smart, Nick. And that obviously ended up being pretty fruitful. I'm thinking the Bears over-under win total is going to be at 6.5.
8.5.
Okay, I know which direction I'm going.
Chicago Bears number. And the Chicago Bears, Joe, are -120 to make the playoffs, +100 to not make the playoffs.
It's a sexy bid, right? If you're DraftKings, you're going to get money coming in on that. You're going to get people talking about it, which then, oh, by the way, means, hey, they have all their other futures out right now for over a win totals. Let's go ahead and look at other things. You especially, if you're smart, in March, when there's nothing else going on, would drop this out there so that you get action throughout as much time of the season before the NFL draft as you can get. That is a very obvious under win total in my mind. Now, I actually don't mind the playoff call because you could get in, I think, in the NFC as a 9-8 team or even 8-9. I mean, there was a possibility, it was remote, that could have occurred this year. And I don't think the NFC got significantly better. I think the NFC North did get better, that the Packers figured themselves out a little bit more, even if they didn't add a whole lot of talent outside of Jacobs and McKinney. That matters to me. Establishing that Matt LaFleur is a really, really good coach matters to me. The Lions are still just as good. The Vikings are going to bottom out. Like that team is going to be, I don't know, what do we have the Vikings win total right now? What's that at?
The Vikings is at 6.5. Juiced pretty heavily to the over, -135. Chicago, by the way, -135 to the over as well.
Yeah, I think I'll take both unders. I think the Vikings are probably more like a 6-win team at most. So I think the Bears are better. But there's still a lot of questions that I need to see. Namely, is Caleb Williams the guy I think he is? Like, I'm not willing to put money on that. It's the Bears after all. They haven't had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards ever, right? In the history. So we need to actually see that happen before I'm like, yep, they're going to win 9 games easily. Go ahead.
And even if he is the guy, it's like, how often does that immediately translate to like 9 or 10 wins, right? It's like, there's been a lot of great quarterbacks who've looked the part, have shown us what you need to show. And it's usually year two or year three when those wins actually start to come. So I think this is kind of crazy. I mean, for one, you're totally right. They're putting this out there for a reason. You know, they're not, these are not predictions. These are thrown out there to generate action. Looking at the schedule, the Bears obviously have a last place schedule. They get the AFC South and the NFC West as their division rotation. So outside of the 6 games against Detroit, Green Bay, and Minnesota, they face the Rams, the Seahawks, the Jags, the Titans, the Panthers, and the Patriots, the Cardinals, the Niners, the Texans, the Colts, and the Commanders. I'm not saying there's not winnable games there. It's hard for me to get to, all right, they have a very good chance to win 9 of these.
Yeah, it's predicated on the division. Like, I think they actually will beat the Vikings twice. They'll probably split against the Packers and just do, and that's going to happen at some point. And whether they do that against the Lions, so you say, hey, you get 4 wins in the division, just get 5 more elsewhere in a last place schedule. Yeah, I mean, like, I do see how that could be possible. The Commanders, that's an easy win. I think the Cardinals is an easy win in my mind, too. Both those teams are just not in the same level where the Bears are. But that AFC South, like, I think that's not a great division, but those are good teams and typically good coach teams. Like, I think Shane Steichen, if he's not one of the best you've never heard of him, coaches in the league. He is one of the best in that kind of category. I think Jacksonville has a lot of talent in that regard that can do the same thing. And Houston is certainly on the rise. So there's no gimmies in that division, even if I think the Bears are a better team than the Titans, certainly. Yeah, it's tough. A lot of that depends on the home away stuff too. And if there are any international things, you know, like the AFC South is primed for international contests, certainly your team especially. And I don't know if that stuff is decided yet or not.
No, it hasn't been. By the way, the Packers are a finalist to play in Brazil.
I know.
The Eagles. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah, the Wednesday night outcome, or the first whatever Wednesday game that would be to start. I would like that to not happen, but I'll give a shout out to Wildine Tausch, one of the local television shows here in the area, or I guess radio shows, I should say. And Mark Tauscher was talking about how if you were the Packers, you should accept that so that later on down the road, when they try to force you to do an international thing, you can say, hey, no, we took the bullet week one here for you. And I think back to 2 years ago, the season completely derailed when they went to one of the London games against the Giants. And I have zero faith that the Packers and Matt LaFleur know what to do in a coaching perspective mid-season when they have these international games. If you're throwing it on a week one and you're saying you're getting 12 games or 12 days back, whatever it is, that's like the best case scenario in a bad scenario. So I would be fine if they took that approach.
All right, we got to breaking news. This is a good thing to end on.
Yes.
Jadeveon Clowney has agreed to terms with the Carolina Panthers, baby.
The Panthers. Oh, I was not expecting that one. What do we know the deal on that? The money? That's got to be like 2 years, $40 million. They had a like just dramatic
deal. This was tweeted out 52 seconds ago by Ian Rappaport. So I'll let you know if there's a follow-up. I have not seen any terms yet.
yeah. So let's see. Is there odds for worst team right now in the NFL? Does DraftKings have that currently out?
I don't know if there's a specifically worst team odds, but they do have odds for all 32 teams to go 0-17. And the Panthers are the shortest at 20-1.
Okay. And that's, they aren't going to go 0-17, but the implication is that the Panthers are going to be one of the lowest over-unders, and rightfully so. I wish, and this goes back to our Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb conversation. I wish I had been more vocal about getting off Bryce Young last year. There just historically is not many times where a small quarterback, not just height stature wise, but also weight wise, succeeds in the NFL. And I felt really confident that Bryce Young was not going to be the guy. I wasn't sure that CJ Stroud was like this good, but I liked CJ Stroud a lot. I should have just been more vocal. So this is the counter to me saying, well, I think Adunze and Neighbors are 1A, 1B. Maybe I should be more in on Adunze because I want to be that guy that's right. I just don't think the Panthers are a very good football franchise. And if they win more than five games next year, I would be stunned. It's going to be like the Cardinals over-under, but without the obvious coach bump that they had with Gannon's. I don't think the Panthers are going to have that kind of level of success. And yeah, that Clowney signs of them, it's because they massively overpaid or gave him some crazy guaranteed money on a one-year deal. Not that he believes they are going to win football games.
Panthers and the Patriots, by the way, tied for the lowest win total over-under at 4.5.
I'll take the under and the Panthers. Patriots, I want to see their schedule before I would go. They're either going to be a 5-win or 4-win and lower. Like I think the max is five. So you just say, take the under in that scenario. But I think Gerard Mayo is going to be a good enough coach. Does he have the Bill Belichick level of, can he raise the floor even in bad scenarios? Like that Chargers 6-0 game. Can Gerard Mayo keep that 6-0, or will that be like a 17-0 win for the Chargers? I don't know. And we'll kind of have to find out as the season goes on.
Yeah. Panthers 4.5 is tough. I would lead under as well. It's like you view every like borderline winnable game for them as a 50-50 at best, right? And you're like, all right, are they gonna find their way into like five dice rolls that come out the right way? I don't know. Probably not.
Right. It's just not. And the NFC South, I think, is the worst division in football. I mean, we'll go over that more as the season progresses. The Saints, Falcons, and Buccaneers are all better teams. They just are straight up better teams, rosters, and coaching staff than the Panthers in the worst division in football. So no, I just don't see a way they're going to win five games. Like I think the under is clear in my mind. I would go that direction every time.
All right. We'll dive in on some more futures next week. We'll have more NFL draft talk coming your way. We'll continue to check in on the best ball markets. Go check out On Demand DFS. You heard the read earlier in the pod. Check it out. You can download the app wherever you get your apps, On Demand DFS. Joe, good checking in with you as always, man. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Sounds good, Nick.